Chapter 3. The Black Lake was so still and serene it resembled a mirror made out of polished obsidian. Strangely, it reflected a multitude of stars that weren't actually there because the sky of the Dark Realm was always an unsettling white. So I trained my gaze on the beautiful galaxy swirling around and around on the lake's surface. It was a mesmerizing kaleidoscope of teals, golds, purples, and magentas. And at first it was calming, but the longer I stared, the more I was becoming overwhelmed. When I tore my eyes away from the pending existential crisis that was about to happen, I was startled to discover I'd walked several feet toward the silent shore without consciously meaning to. In a panic, my gaze locked on to the one thing I seemed to be drawn to, despite the fact that if I really wanted to, I could leave at any time. However, when my eyes locked on to the figure hovering over the center of the lake like some magical Arthurian legend, any fear I felt melted away and was replaced by sheer awe. "Nova," I breathed, as the shiny indigo strands of her hair floated all around her like she was suspended underwater, and her skin was inundated with scales that shimmered like diamonds and looked just as indestructible. When my voice ricocheted around the odd space, her finned ears swayed outward from the sides of her head like two miniature satellites, and she turned her whole body weightlessly around in the air. Her intense eyes were a piercing red like the center of the sun itself, and I actually had to look away. Every time I blinked, her visage scattered across my sight like it had scorched itself into my retinas. Then she smiled at me softly, and her eyes faded back to a dusky maroon before she slipped down into the water simply because she seemed to prefer swimming over her Chris Angel act.
"Alex,"
she said, and rose up out of the inky water, still beautifully naked and glistening like the precious jade gemstone her skin resembled. "Hello," I said, when she pressed her cool body against mine.
"Show you,"
she said, and then tugged me toward the mysterious Black Lake. "Show me what?" I asked, with a little apprehension at being let out into the cold water. Then she and I swam out until the bottom of the lake fell away, and we were bobbing together as we lightly treaded water with our arms and legs to stay afloat. Nova sank until the lashes on her lower lids barely skimmed the surface of the water. She watched me with her deep maroon eyes that reflected universes, and I was helpless but to follow her down. An iconic
"Skrrr!"
followed by the feeling of a feathered cannonball barreling into my chest was enough of a kick to my subconscious, and I was yanked out of the Dark Realm and forced into the harsh light of day. "Fucking dark hell," I grunted, as my sight struggled to register what I was seeing. Streaks of neon lights striped my vision every time I blinked, and the patterns were similar to the times I accidentally gazed too long at the filament of a bare incandescent bulb. The strange black lake of stars was so vivid, I found I was actually holding my breath as if I was still underwater, and I gasped in a great draft of air. My rabbiting heart calmed when I realized I was indeed awake and in the real world. And if I ever doubted the fact, Rufus, my loyal crow moth, was there to remind me by nuzzling me roughly under my chin. But fuck me if my dreams weren't getting trippy lately.
"Skrrr! Skrrr!"
the dusty creature cawed and got his yellow pollen dandruff all over me. It was then that I noticed Nova was once again absent from my side, and I couldn't help but sigh inwardly at the fact. Luckily, the gold seeker moth was able to take my mind off any potential disappointment with his antics, and I couldn't help but laugh at how ridiculous he was being. "I missed you too, buddy," I said, and rubbed the little guy's belly when he flipped over on his back. "Do you have a message for me?" He perked up at this and jumped up to his tiny crow feet. Then he lifted his wing, and a scroll plopped out into my lap.
"Skrrr!"
he cawed proudly. "Good boy," I chuckled, and stroked his dusty head as he made himself comfortable on my knee. "Let's see what the crew has to say." Rufus settled down on his little haunches and started to preen his golden feathers, and I idly stroked his head as I began to read. I recognized Shay's elegant looping handwriting instantly, and my eyes drank in her script as her sweet voice filled my head while I skimmed over the words. According to the Phoenix woman, they were very relieved to know Rylan and I were both in one piece. And Shay specifically mentioned how intrigued both Zoe and her were about the Lacuna woman I talked about in my last message to them. So much so, some of the subtext I was picking up on made me think their reception of the Siren woman might not be too much of a shock. That is, if Nova even wanted to join our dynamic. I stopped reading for a moment to scan my surroundings for the strange blue-haired woman, but she was still nowhere to be seen. So I dropped my eyes back to the letter with a sigh. It was more good news, however, and I enjoyed reading about how Zoe helped Jenner do something cool to basically triangulate our position after Rye and I had disappeared. And they were only a quarter of a day away from Ohm. According to Bowden, Vella had been having nightmares one night and ended up commandeering the airship. The eccentric cockatoo woman apparently only nudged the ship a little to the south, and by morning they were within view of the Isle of Ohm. Then Shay explained how all of them experienced hearing some sort of loud sound, and after that it was pretty easy for them to find us from there. That explained how they knew right where to find us in this world devoid of GPS. But the newest strange behavior from our resident maid Velrala concerned me. Normally, the astute cockatoo woman was as sharp as a tack and on top of her game. She was one of the females in Aventol who knew how to survive, and she was savvy when it came to enterprises entering into the markets. Even though she'd started out as an enemy, she'd soon turned a new leaf and quickly became an asset by selling some of the products my estates generated. She knew how to turn a profit, and to my knowledge, Brightwood Estates was flush with gold. Recently, however, the woman kept becoming afflicted with strange bouts of mania. She would frequently go up to people and give them random objects for good luck against any harm or death. These random things ranged from a discarded piece of bone to a coley blossom for Zoe's hair. It was easy to pass them off as being meaningless tokens of the poor woman's madness. But somewhere along the way, I started noticing a pattern to the objects she would nearly worry herself sick over unless we promised to carry them with us. When Vel insisted Zoe wear a blossom in her hair on the night of Regent Siskern's wedding banquet, we'd all passed it off as one of her episodes. But after the disaster where the treacherous illusionist troupe hired for the night's entertainment tried to kidnap as many women and children as they could, I realized the key to foiling their plan was in that flower. Because the illusionists used an ingenious invisible cube to house the hostages, they almost got away with their plot. However, no one accounted for the fact the cube wasn't soundproof in the slightest, and if it wasn't for someone's well-timed hay fever, they might have made it out of the hall. But someone sneezed and gave away the position of the invisible structure hovering via magnets above all of our heads. And now, most recently, Shay's letter reminded me of the silver bell Vella had similarly insisted I carry with me. The mysterious necessity of this common object made itself known when I'd stumbled upon a neat hack. While trying to outrun a giant pack of tree spiders known as spiny beasts, I ended up combining my time trance ability with it in order to manipulate the high-pitched sound. In an awesome turn of events, the two things combined allowed me to vaporize the monster with the sound beam. And then later I used this ability against Yates Krev when he challenged me to a duel. I was pretty sure the loud sound Shay mentioned was probably the bastard disintegrating. Hearing how Vella also had a hand in pinpointing where Rylan and I ended up due to another one of her strange episodes hooked my brain once again. And I knew my working theory on the cockatoo woman's true nature and origins was becoming clearer. But I needed to make sure with Jenner before I dared give voice to what I was thinking. A splash drew my attention away from my musings, and I looked up to see the image of Nova crawling out of the lake with a fresh fish still wriggling around in her mouth. "Look at you," I grinned, and put aside the rest of the letter for now.
"Gah?"
Rufus popped his head out from under one of his wings and looked around with his bulbous red eyes. "Rue, this is Nova," I introduced as I got up to go greet the siren woman, who looked so pleased with her catch.
"Squirrel!"
the crow moth said as he flapped over, landed on a rock next to her, and settled in to observe. Nova paused in the middle of whacking the fish against a hard rock so it would quit moving, and she cocked her indigo head at the feathered creature. Rufus mimicked her behavior, and when Nova's ears flapped outward and snapped back in, the gold seeker even copied this by flapping his wings along with her. When I saw her pretty lips spread into a fond smile, I knew the lovable little terror had done it again and stolen another person's heart. Pest.
Fush,
Nova said when she got the poor thing to finally stop squirming. She then handed it to me expectantly, and I realized she wanted me to cook it again like last night. So I laughed and worked on quickly building up a fire. Once again, I was grateful for the natural resources Ohm seemed to provide, especially the shale-like rocks that were plentiful and could be used not only as a blade in a jiffy, but they were also perfect striking rocks to get a blaze roaring in no time. When the fire was good and hot, I quickly gutted and scaled the large orange fish, stabbed it on the end of my makeshift harpoon, and poked it back in the hole in the ground I made last night so it could roast. While our breakfast cooked, Nova and Rufus occupied themselves with what looked to be a game of hide-and-seek while I went back to the letter. Shay continued on with her general excitement about the news that the Mech sisters were heading to them from Alem after their temple assessment, and then she finished up the letter with saying how she hoped I was coming home soon, and how she, Zoe, and especially Jenner were anxious to meet the Lacuna woman. The part about Jenner intrigued me immensely, and I was eager to know what he made of all the documents I sent with Horace about Nova and her blood connection with the Aldas. And that was just the tip of the iceberg on the slew of other shit I couldn't really make heads or tails of without his expert eye. Nova laughed as the crow moth attempted to thread a small twig with white berries and green leaves into her hair, along with a dozen other sticks, wildflowers, and moss. The whole effect was like some Vogue forest nymph or something, and instead of being ridiculous, it actually made her look extra exotic and gorgeous. She was also still wonderfully naked, so that added to the overall aesthetic, too. Nova, honey, I said, and beckoned her to my side as I checked on the fish. This bad boy was just right, and like last night, she seemed to relish being fed little bits by me every now and then, and she started to hum a little as she drew random patterns on the dusty ground. The peace of the moment felt nice, and I figured this was as good of a time as any to finally broach the issue.
Come, Ruru,
Nova said and patted her lap so he would climb out of the nest he'd made of her magnificent hair. He grumbled a little at having to leave his cozy perch, but he ended up being just as cozy in her lap as he got pets from her. Nova, I said, and placed a hand on her knee.
Hmm?
She cocked her head to the side and waited for my question. About us. I trailed off, suddenly unsure of how to approach the issue at hand, especially with the Siren Woman's limited threshold for language.
Mate,
Nova eventually said when I stalled out, and I gave her a bright grin. Yeah, really? I asked, and took one of her hands in mine. You think I'm your mate? She blinked her garnet eyes down at both of our hands, and then back up at my face.
You hunt for Nova. Make a mate's nest for Nova. We are mates.
Exactly, I agreed. I want to continue to take care of you, if that's what you would like.
You mean stay?
She asked with a hopeful light in her striking eyes. Yes, well, not here, but I'd like to take you back home with me, I clarified.
Home?
She looked behind her at the decrepit structure leaning drunkenly on its many stilts. No, not Rickety House, I said, and then pointed up at the mantis ship hovering overhead. My house. Nova tracked her gaze upward, and her face clouded faster than an oncoming thunderstorm in the Midwest.
Leave?
Her full mouth turned down into a frown, and a sudden onslaught of frustrated tears filled her fiery eyes.
Can't!
What do you mean you can't? I asked in confusion, as I looked around for an answer that would explain such a bewildering statement. You don't have to be afraid of your father anymore.
No, no!
she said, and shook her head hard enough that one of Rufus's golden feathers fell from where it used to be pinned behind her ear.
Can't leave.
I bit my lip and breathed steadily through my nose as I took a moment to summon some patience. The language barrier at times was frustrating to try to overcome. But I knew with how touchy she was that getting short with her would only be counterproductive. Can you tell me why? I asked calmly. She frowned for a moment before stating,
No.
Okay, well, I started, but she interrupted me.
Not tell, but can show.
She attempted to clarify for my sake, and my eyebrows arched upwards. Okay, show me, I said, and stood up.
Yes,
she said eagerly. And then she led me down the small slope and marched straight into the lake. I knew she was the type to probably carry on with her objective, regardless of if the person she was leading even chose to follow or not. So I didn't even hesitate to swim after her. What I did end up hesitating slightly at was when about a quarter of the way to the center, she dove under, and her green and black tail disappeared with a small splash. I stopped swimming forward and turned around as I searched for her. After a few seconds, Nova popped back up, and she sent me a gesture that obviously meant I was supposed to follow her even under the surface. Since there wasn't a reason not to trust her, I dove down under the clear surface and frog-kicked after her. Nova circled up and back until she made a loop that had her swimming right next to me. So when the last of my oxygen left in a rush of bubbles, she was there to grab my wrist and keep me from heading for the surface. Before I could panic, however, she covered my mouth with hers and forced clear air almost painfully into my lungs, and I blinked at her through the shimmering air bubbles swirling all around us. Not only did her kiss of life fill me with much-needed oxygen, but it regulated something within me that changed my natural buoyancy and made it a little easier to stay underwater instead of fighting against the physics trying to drag me up to the surface. The crushing pressure right behind my eyes was also gone, which was doubly neat. With a lot more confidence than before, I swam in tandem with the beautiful siren woman as she continued to lead us down, down, down. We were traveling so deep, the crystal cerulean water faded into a haunting ultramarine that also enveloped me in cold the farther we swam away from the sun. I wasn't sure how much time exactly it took to swim in this liminal blueness, but I did know Nova had to supply me with air four more times before she suddenly swam sharply upward. My head suddenly broke the surface, and I took a huge gasp of air and wiped the water out of my eyes. When I was able to look around, I saw via a blue pulsing light as the siren woman led us both into an underwater cavern about half the size of a football field. The light source in question was coming from an obelisk stone on the far shore, and it was throbbing weakly with a pale blue light that reminded me of something corpse-like. Nova's silhouette was limned in the sickly blue light, and I was barely able to make out her scowl as if the obelisk had personally offended her. I paddled closer and let my shoulder brush against hers. She glanced at me and then tilted her head toward the obelisk, and I followed her out of the water and onto the shore. "What is this?" I asked, after we spent a few moments staring at the pulsating thing. Instinctively, I knew not to touch it or even get any closer than my current 6 feet away. And when the woman beside me took a seat on her knees in front of the thing, I followed suit and sat cross-legged next to her.
This is... Lacuna...
She trailed off as she seemed to search for the words in her limited vocabulary bank. She huffed, and instead she smoothed her hand along the ground in front of the both of us, like she was preparing a canvas to be painted on. With one long, thin finger as her appointed tool, she began to draw something in the fine black sand at the base of the obelisk. The pictograph was that of a human figure, and she had circled the space in the middle of the figure's chest in particular. Heart, I guessed.
Yes!
She clapped her hands together.
Lacuna, keep island heart. Here, safe.
You protect it? I ventured.
Yes, yes!
Nova cheered again and then rewarded my supposed cleverness by smushing her nose against mine in a clumsy Eskimo kiss.
Smart mate.
I chuckled after she pulled away, and I watched her as she swiped away at the first image just like an Etch-a-Sketch. Then she concentrated fiercely on her stick figures, and I tried not to get distracted by the cute way she poked the tip of her tongue out of the corner of her mouth. After a moment, a miniature mural was sketched into the sand, and I sat back as she guided me with the stem of the only flower Rufus twined into her hair that had survived the journey to the cavern.
Lacuna, people,
she started, and pointed the stem at a cluster of stick figures with fishtails. Then she began to cross them out one by one, until just the figure with the floating hair was left.
Me, only one to protect.
Nova then circled the shape that was clearly meant to be the glowing obelisk she dubbed the island's heart. You are the last of your kind, I said. She vocalized sadly, and her fin ears flattened parallel to the ground in a way that reminded me of how Zoe's cat ears would do something similar if something upset her. With a pang, I considered what it was like to be not only neglected and basically abandoned by your own father, but also to be the very last of your kind. I was familiar with loneliness and abandonment, but hers was on a scale I could scarcely imagine. I'm sorry, I said. She nodded, wiped away a stray tear that had fallen without her permission, and then wiped her canvas clear again. When she was finished with her latest installment, there was a shift in the atmosphere, and if she was sad before, her sorrow was palpable now. This time she didn't guide me from image to image like before, and instead she brought her knees up to her chest and waited for me to add the last pieces together. It wasn't difficult because her picture was a simple one. It showed the obelisk again, and it was radiating zigzagging energy lines outward to any of the Lacuna stick figures that tried to go too far away. The last image she drew to the right of the first was of the obelisk next to her floaty-haired portrait. The angry, radiant energy that could be seen emitting from the first panel changed from the harsh zigzags into peaceful waves, and the last thing the siren woman added was a circle around where her figure's own heart was supposed to be. I studied the series of images for quite a while because I didn't want to automatically jump to the first thing that made sense. The longer I stared at it, however, I knew my first conclusion was the right one, and after one last glance to cement what I felt I knew, I faced her and took a breath. The heart forces your kind to stay, I said, and she nodded immediately.
Yes, because sick,
she added, and pointed both to the drawing and to the obelisk in question. Because the heart is sick, I asked, and my theory about this being another tear situation was starting to make even more sense.
Yes.
She said, as her ears flattened again in dejection. Does this part here mean there is a way to heal it and stop the heart from keeping you here? I asked, as plainly and as simply as I could.
Nova must stay,
she said, and gripped fistfuls of her tangled locks.
Only way to leave with mate is to make not sick, but can't. I tried, but nothing.
You couldn't figure out how to heal it, I concluded, and my heart began to race when I connected two and two, and then on to four and four.
Mother tried too,
she admitted, leaned into me, and rubbed her cheek against my shoulder.
Told me I must do this, because I am only... I am lost.
What if I told you I know how to do it? I asked, no longer able to contain myself.
What?
She shrieked, and both ears snapped up.
How? Tear?
At this, she tackled me flat on my back with her knees straddling my waist, and her hands landed on my cheeks as if she was worried I would glance away and devote a single shred of my attention elsewhere. It's not actually me, but someone I care about, I said, and cupped her face with my own hands as well. and I know she will want to help you. She healed Tear's heart, too. As if the obelisk was listening on some sentient level, a large flash filled the cavern and caused both of us to black out with it.